It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time. But those guys aren't listening. They're uncoachable right now.
Southern Illinois basketball talk here on HD2.
Hey, your home for Saluki information in southern, in central Indiana. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soce. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog, which you can check out at...
filmsociology.tumblr.com. We're getting through this real fast.
This week on the blog, we're go back to looking back at the year 1983, which was a major turning point for me as a film fan. So you can blame 1983 for the show. This week's installment is the Francis Ford Coppola S.E. Hinton double feature that was The Outsiders and Rumblefish. So you can look at Diane Lane in color and black and white. Tracy's now gone. Tracy's thinking of the fantasy sequence in the high school scenes in Rumblefish. So am I. Next week's installment, the last one, we'll be talking about The Big Chill. The person who's giving us Saluki humor... That's Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to give too much away, but next week the Film Sociology offices will be on Christmas vacation. I'm like Mr. Fezziwig. Everybody gets the day off. So next week's Film Sociology will be a classic one. We're doing the Fresh Air treatment.
And classic.
You'll hear three classic interviews from 2013. So it could be somebody from the film world. It could be one of my local guests. It could be somebody on... That's a beautiful woman on Food Network that makes Kobe's eyes roll. You never know. So,
or it could be Molly Sims.
It could be Molly Sims.
I don't know what you've got planned.
You know what? You're going to have to tune in next week at 5 o'clock to find out. Ladies and gentlemen, and since I'm going on vacation very quickly, and I feel like George Bailey, because you're not anybody if you don't. I have four Clarences hanging out here, and Kobe. Kobe, you're the Zuzu, I think, of the group here.
Oh, wow.
The Radio Bedford Falls. No, actually, right now it looks like the Broad Ripple branch of the Promise Keepers. But sitting to my left, which doesn't mean anything on radio, co-host of Indie Style, the tall one, the second best looking one on the show, that's Tracy Forner.
My wife does not shot fake. She has faked a lot of things. A shot is not one of them.
And by the way, Mrs. Forner, thank you for letting Tracy come out and play.
I got clearance from the tower.
Clearance. So, and do we have the intros for two of our other?
Oh,
you know
we
have to. Because I don't, I already, the first time I had Tracy on, the incredible sport that he is, I remember, because we would email each other like, can you make it? No, I can't make it. No, I can't make it. No, I'm going to be on vacation. So I rattled off a montage of all the guests that were easier to get on than he, even though he works two blocks away. But we already did that bit, but I like bringing it up. And also because we have intros for two of our guests.
That's right.
Sitting next to Tracy, which doesn't mean anything on radio.
We'll just continue down the line.
It's called Inception.
Is this the longest intro we have?
I think so.
We're clocking in at 56 seconds here.
Whoa! Hans is still saying it, not long enough.
And that's the show, everybody.
Yeah, it's an intro and an outro.
I think you can milk this a little more. Yeah? Okay, there you go. Oh, that's getting better. Oh, even better now. Yeah.
Four, 5, 6.
I love it.
7, 8, 7.
Wait, yeah.
Brian Hartz is here.
So, Brian, thank you for coming. Now that your intro's done, show's over.
All right. See you later.
No, you. I know you have a couple things going on. You have a new blog.
Absolutely.
Which,
at cinematicmusic.blogspot.com. In honor of Peter O'Toole, we're talking about The Lion in Winter today. A great overlooked score by John Barry.
Very
and,
good.
Also got a totally different thing to plug. I'm going to be... treading the boards here in the Irvington Lodge 1 week from Saturday, December 28th. Eclectic Pond Theater Company is putting on
10x10?
10x10.
Oh,
Shakespeare's
yeah,
10 greatest plays in 10 minutes each. It's going to be fast-paced. It's going to be ridiculous. A lot of humor at the expense of and supplied by the Bard. Come out and have a lot of fun.
And I should also remember, I forgot to say earlier, Indie Style Monday through Friday is at 9.
Yeah. When... most people are off being, you know,
thanks,
responsible adults with their jobs and things like that.
Otherwise, you come here. And
if you make a show and no one watches, does it make a sound?
Yes. Well, there's this show. Whose phone is ringing?
Speaking
seriously?
He brought his own intro music.
We got our first call today.
I just hung up on my wife. Okay.
We don't have any.
And
we don't have any tote bags.
I was about to say rising from the ashes, because he's been a little under the weather, but now he is back, and we thought this intro, it fits more appropriate now than ever before.
Lawrence of Arabia. He's an English guy. He came to fight the Turkish.
Okay, Clark, right there.
Right there, Clark.
That's what I'm talking about. Lawrence of Arabia doesn't have any lyrics to it. Doesn't have any words.
What do you mean doesn't have lyrics?
It's music.
To
it? It's music.
Hey, I've seen the movie 4 times.
And there were no words to it.
What are you
there
doing?
There are no words to that.
Did
you hear what I was singing earlier?
Somewhere I know that somebody, I think, wrote lyrics to this song.
Mike Ferry, welcome back.
Thank you.
Glad you're feeling better.
Why, thank you. And let's watch what we say about the Salukis. I mean, back in the day, Carbondale at Halloween was a party.
Hey, what am I? Well, and I had a fantastic ACTF weekend at Carbondale. So
yeah, I have fond memories of Carbondale. Yes,
but all of our wives could actually shoot better than apparently the Salukis right now. And hanging out on the bench in case somebody needs to get arrested. That's Martin Morris.
In case somebody gets arrested.
You know what? I think. Hi, Martin. How you doing?
Oh, I'm fine.
You know what? I was gonna normally I start with what's new in theaters, and of course we're in one of the busiest times for movies. But I think we're just gonna save that for the second half of the show.
Theater of the absurd.
Waiting for somebody. Godot ran away.
God knows who.
But one of the reasons why I have all these guys here, besides the fact that Jon Favreau couldn't come up with the dinner group this awesome, but we're all here to raise a glass. We will have stronger liquids in our glasses when we go elsewhere.
There's dinner.
Kobe, could you call one of our underwriters and see if they'll bring food here? You know Joe would in a minute.
Yeah.
So, Joe Vuskovich, if you're listening, please come to 16th Meridian by 6 o'clock.
Oh, hell yes.
But no, we are raising a glass to Peter O'Toole. And, yes, salute. And not Salukis. But, and as Tracy referred to him on Twitter, as the last of the Hellraisers. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a book that Tracy turned me on to, and if you get a chance, go and buy it. And it's called Hellraisers, The Life in Inebriated Times of Richard Burton, Richard Harris, Oliver Reed, and Peter O'Toole.
I think we were talking about this the last time Tracy was here.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? Because it's a great book.
It's also the last book I read.
I think we could all do the audio.
Honestly, it's the fastest I've ever read a book for pleasure in my life. I could not put it down.
Cool.
And
it's short because it's only the stuff that they remember.
Exactly. Did it corroborate?
It's yeah, slightly different than Mickey Mantle's autobiography, which is 600 blank pages. But I would say, think about the worst day you've ever had. we're not even close. And I think
they could burn Carbondale down on a bad day.
But I think what there is, and Brian, back me up on this, I think there is a point when young actors, guy actors, I don't know if the ladies do this as much, but there is a period where you want to be like these guys. You want to be able to consume as much liquid, chase as many women, raise as much hell, and still be able to perform sometimes better nights than others on a stage doing the classics.
You'd love to be able to do that. I've yet to meet anybody who can.
Exactly.
Although Plummer, sort of an adjunct member of that
group.
He once said that it was kind of the mark that you'd made it if you could, do Hamlet at, a 2:30 Sunday matinee whilst completely hungover.
That's a chess set we need to make. Those guys. And then, yeah, you have Plummer, Albert Finney, Michael Caine.
Yeah.
That's a dream right there. Yeah, there's a dream too. Yeah, Finney is still with us. So, but I think O'Toole got the case of scotches from that four. It's like the episode of MASH where
the tontine.
Yes, exactly. So, I guess I'll start here with Trace. What do you think of your first impression when you think of O'Toole?
Lion in Winter. I remember seeing the film in it. I was young enough when I saw it that I was all right. It put me on a whole nother level as far as, I don't even remember how old I was. I might have been a teenager, but it just it was the movie version. It wasn't the stage version, obviously, but what watching him command, not just the words, but and the two of the mighty. I mean,
yeah,
mighty.
Hepburn's no slouch.
Yeah, exactly. And watching those and it wasn't scenery eating. It was just two larger than life talents. And I didn't know why, but I felt I normally would have flipped past that to something animated. But as a child or something that blew up or something with John Wayne on a horse. But I was just felt compelled to watch it. And it just blew me away. That was the first time I saw Peter O'Toole act.
Kate also told Duke to stay on the horse a few years later in Rooster Cogburn.
That's true.
It's funny. One of the things that we complain about we've talked about this ad nauseum about Man of Steel, where if Superman and Zod are beating each other because they're two equal titans, so they're not going to be flying eight city blocks if they get hit. They hit us. We fly eight city blocks, and I think that's the same thing with Hepburn and O'Toole.
It's probably the first time I realized that women behind the throne could literally talk to their men like men. He always thought they deferred to the king,
well,
not, not in private
Hepburn,
chamber. Well, exactly.
Even Eleanor even wore a pantsuit back then and could play good golf.
It was under the skirts.
Brian?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's one of the greats. By the way, he was just 35 when he played that role. Catherine Hepburn was something like 60.
Wow. Yeah,
pretty amazing.
You don't get to be 50 living in King without doing a little plotting. So kudos to the facial hair and the hard living choices that O'Toole made in 60s.
Served him well.
Yes,
served him well then.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I think of just the incredible piercing blue eyes, but I also think about all the...
You sound like your wife for a second there.
Well, I got a nod in her direction at some point. He got the privilege of being in movies with a lot of great music.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, with a persona as huge as Peter O'Toole, you need a Maurice Jarre, a John Barry, or even the score to Last Emperor.
Yep.
We talked about that composer not so long ago.
Yes.
Sakamoto?
Yes.
He's one of those rare personalities. You just don't. I mean, I guess maybe Russell Crowe kind of comes close, maybe. But
he seems to be more of the beating people up than the drinking heavily kind of thing.
I couldn't, as smart as he is, I couldn't possibly imagine him holding court with Orson Welles, just shooting the breeze about Shakespeare.
That's on YouTube, folks.
Yeah,
check that out.
If you've seen that, look up the clip of Peter O'Toole and Orson Welles talking about Hamlet on the British talk show. The two older British gentlemen that they're talking with just can't keep up and look mostly stunned throughout the whole interview. But it's amazing. He's the kind of guy who could go out drinking in Paris and wake up in Corsica, but also read the diaries.
He called that Wednesday.
Yeah, pretty much. but also like read the diaries of 16th century theater producers for fun. So you know the like of that kind of Hellraiser, incredible talent and passionate intellectual, you just don't find that combination.
Mike?
Well, as a child, my dad took us to see What's New Pussycat, the drive-in.
Oh, good angle.
It was the second, you know, feature, so, you know, he was counting on us being asleep. So that was probably the first Peter O'Toole movie I saw. But as an adult, the first one that I saw with O'Toole in it was Caligula.
Wow.
Cause,
and nobody in film knew it was going to turn out that way.
No. I mean, quite impressive cast for an X-rated movie.
Yeah, because it was. Well, I don't believe it was X-rated at the time the stars were being filmed, except maybe Helen Mirren. Salute.
Hello.
But as much as we joke about here on the show, I finally got around to seeing Lawrence of Arabia last year when Turner did the direct-to-theater feed.
And there's no words
for the
to
anniversary.
It.
And there are, well, in the movie, there are no words to it.
By the way, that clip is from the Hollywood Nights. We need to stage a screening of that.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Martin, come on up. You're on the other side of the pond when O'Toole was at his rise.
Yes. I saw Lawrence of Arabia while living in Cyprus, where my dad was in the military.
Wow.
And it was in an open-air theater.
Wow.
And a hot summer night, and the most impressive thing was it ended at 11:30. You know, this was a monster-length movie. Now, also, interesting, my father served in the Royal Air Force from 1935 onwards. He's deceased now. But he knew people who knew the real T.E. Lawrence when he changed his identity and tried to get away from the Lawrence part and joined the RAF as Aircraftsman Shaw until he was rumbled.
Whoa.
Yeah. So very strange connections there.
Well, it's funny you mention because my first time seeing Lawrence of Arabia was in the Cyprus of the Midwest. That's Detroit.
The divided city?
Yeah, the divided city. Summer of 1989. Fox Theater in Detroit, they had just completed, I believe, a $2 million renovation. And I was home from school my freshman year, and they had a 70-millimeter print of Lawrence of Arabia. So in 1989, for $10, I watched Lawrence of Arabia with live organ accompaniment before, intermission after, and worth every damn penny. I had only seen one other lean film on the big screen. That was, of course, Passage to India when I was 14. But, I mean, it was – the scope of it was just unbelievable. And, yes, in every – I jokingly say we were the Promise Keepers. That was one damn handsome man back in the early 60s.
Yeah.
Noel Coward's favorite quote.
If he were any prettier, he'd been Florence of Arabia. Ah, can we have another take, please?
Yeah. So, but my first O'Toole film in the theaters with my dad, and my dad believed in the R rating. You know, so long as you're going with him, it's okay.
Yeah.
But I got to see the stuntman. And by the way, there's an influence if you want to direct plays or movies right there is Eli Cross. So, and I'm hoping once we go on vacation, I'm trying not to browbeat the second smartest person in our house, but I told her you have to see one of my favorite year. I think that's a great Peter O'Toole 101. So
yeah, we've already talked about Henry II in The Lion in Winter, but don't forget that O'Toole also played Henry II in Beckett.
Absolutely.
Which was I don't know if that was his follow up to Lawrence at my
1964
with fellow Hellraiser Richard Burton.
Yes, yep.
So I'm sure I'd like to see the budget list for that because you know is that the scenery? Is that location? No, that's dinner. So
that's scotch actually.
That is.
Well, he did film large chunks of it up on the Northumbrian coast, which is an adjunct area of Scotland.
little
local culture.
Here, his follow-ups to Lawrence of Arabia were Beckett, Lord Jim, and What's New Pussycat.
For some people, that's a career.
That's right. Not bad. Not bad at all. All right.
I'm just surprised that Mike, you remembered What's New Pussycat with Ursula Andress distracting you from everything.
By the way,
I was very young.
Gentlemen, Ursula.
I was watching.
I was watching it in my pajamas. It was a drive-in.
You know what? I still watch Ursula Andress in my pajamas. So, Ursula, salute. All right.
How did Ursula Andress get in your pajamas?
Now that I'll never know. I'm waiting for those pictures to develop. All right. Now that we've gone off the rails. Yes. And then last one, and then we'll get to the audio.
I just discovered this morning, in case you want to see Lawrence Arabia in a movie theater, and I can't recommend that highly enough.
Ooh.
They're showing it this weekend at the Toby at the IMA.
Oh, not really.
No way.
Yeah. Really?
Ooh. Yep. If you don't have plans, cancel them. Go to that.
Yep. Wow.
Jeez.
I think it's 12:30, but check your local listings. Well, they're exclusively local listings because it's just at the Toby. But, 35mm print on the screen. See it.
Not bad at all.
This is not optional.
And failure's not an option.
There'll be a quiz next week.
That's right. All right. With that, he also drank a lot and played chess with Omar Sharif. So, all right, here is a little audio tribute to one Peter O'Toole.
In many ways, the work of a critic is easy. We risk very little, yet enjoy a position over those who offer up their work and themselves to our judgment. We thrive on negative criticism, which is fun to write and to read. But the bitter truth we critics must face is that in the grand scheme of things, the average piece of junk is probably more meaningful than our criticism designating it so. But there are times when a critic truly risks something, and that is in the discovery and defense of the new. The world is often unkind to new talent, new creations. The new needs friends. Last night I experienced something new. An extraordinary meal from a singularly unexpected source. To say that both the meal and its maker have challenged my preconceptions about fine cooking is a gross understatement. They have rocked me to my core. In the past, I have made no secret of my disdain for Chef Gusteau's famous motto, "Anyone can cook." But I realize only now do I truly understand what he meant. Not everyone can become a great artist, but a great artist can come from anywhere. It is difficult to imagine more humble origins than those of the genius now cooking at Gusteau's, who is, in this critic's opinion, nothing less than the finest chef in France. I will be returning to Gusteau's soon, hungry for more.
Not many people have a destiny, Lawrence. It's a terrible thing for a man to funk it if he has.
Are you speaking from experience?
No.
You're guessing, then. Suppose you're wrong.
Why suppose that? We both know I'm right.
Yes.
After all...
I said yes. The 16th.
Can you do it? I'll give you a lot of money.
Artillery.
I can't.
They won't be coming for money, not the best of them. They'll be coming for Damascus. Which I'm going to give them.
That's all I want.
All you want is someone holding down the Turkish right. But I'm going to give them Damascus. We'll get there before you do. And when we've got it, we'll keep it. You can tell the politicians to burn their bit of paper now.
Fair enough.
Fair. What's fair got to do with it? It's going to happen. I shall want quite a lot of money.
All there is.
Not that much. The best of them won't come for money. They'll come for me.
He's doomed, isn't he?
Yes.
At last.
I forbid you to gloat.
At seeing your enemy perish, why not?
Beckett is my enemy. But in the human balance, traitor that he is and naked as his mother made him, he's worth 100 of you, madam. With your crown and your jewels and your august uncle, the emperor, into the bargain. I'm forced to fight him now and crush him. But at least he gave me with open hands everything that is at all good in me. And you have never given me anything but your carping mediocrity and your everlasting obsession with your puny little person and what you thought was due to it. That's why I forbid you to smile while Beckett is being destroyed.
I gave you my youth, Gave you your children?
I don't like my children. And as for your youth, that withered flower, pressed between the pages of a hymn book since you were 12 years old with its watery blood and stale, insipid scent, you can bid farewell to that without a tear. Your body was an empty desert, madam, which duty forced me to wander in alone. But you have never been a wife to me. And Beckett was my friend.
My life, when it is written, will read better than it lived. Henry Fitzempress, first Plantagenet, a king at 21, the ablest soldier of an able time. He led men well, he cared for justice when he could, and ruled for 30 years a state as great as Charlemagne's. He married out of love a woman out of legend. Not in Alexandria or Rome or Camelot has there been such a queen. She bore him many children, but no sons. King Henry had no sons. He had three whiskered things, but he disowned them. You're not mine! We're not connected! I deny you! None of you will get my kingdom, I leave you nothing, and I wish you plague. May all your children break and die.
I am the Lord Jesus, come again in my own body, to heal the sick, the troubled, and the ignorant. I am he that liveth, and behold, I am alive for everyone. Is everybody happy? Now hear this. I come to proclaim the new dispensation. The gospel dispensation promised only salvation to the soul. The new dispensation gives it to the body as well. Jesus Christ, Mark 1, suffered to redeem the spirit and left the body separated from God, so Satan found a place in man and formed in him a false love, a love of self. Explode! Only feel. Love and sin no more.
What does it feel like to be God?
Like a river flowing everywhere. I pick up a newspaper and I'm everywhere. Conducting a summit conference, dying of hunger in a Peruvian gutter, accepting the Nobel Prize for Literature, raping a nun in Sumatra, under this protective outer shell.
Step right up, folks. Ride the ride of the century on Eli's killer crane. Get in, I have a present for you.
Thanks, I'll walk.
Ah, youth, hot youth. In town for 6 hours only, captures the leading lady. Can't be bad, shouldn't be too depressed.
Is it okay to be depressed about you showing the cops the film?
You don't really trust me, do you? Come here to me. You constantly amaze me. You don't go to movies. What are you, a communist? What were those handcuffs? Some sort of decoy disguise? Did you not know that King Kong the First was just 3'6" tall? He only came up to Fay Wray's belly button. If God could do the tricks that we can do, he'd be a happy man. What are you so worried about the police and the film for?
What am I worried about the police for?
Look over here, son. Look through that.
Looking for Big Bad Cameron. This my present?
No. Your present is some advice.
Keep
it. You're wearing that look again, that gleam. It's so hostile. You're like some sprinter about to set a record for the 60-yard dash. Is that why all the fuzz are chasing you? What are you, some sort of sexual freak dashing across America in spurts with your fly open?
You're close. What's your advice?
Button your fly and be at the airport at 3 p.m. on Sunday with the rest of the crew. And then fly with us to where the setting sun bleeds into a million swimming pools a man can hide in. You do swim as well as run.
I can swim like a fish. Why are you trying to save my ass?
Because you're as crazy as the young man I'm making this film about. Besides, I've fallen madly in love with the dark side of your nature.
You look great. How do you feel?
I feel surprisingly well, Stone. Thank you. So well that I'm going to make a prediction. Now, usually it takes me 2 or 3 takes just to warm up, but tonight I predict we'll get it on the first take.
We always get it on the first take. We have to.
You do?
Sure, this is live television.
Live. Live. What does live mean?
It means at the exact moment you're cavorting and leaping around that stage over there, 20 million people are seeing it.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Mr. Swan, you're white.
You mean it all goes into the camera lens and then just spills out into people's houses?
Yeah.
Why has it nobody had the goodness to explain this to me before?
It's nothing to worry about, Mr. Swan. Our audiences are great.
Audience? What audience? Audience?
You knew there was an audience. What did you think those seats were for?
I haven't performed in front of an audience for 28 years. Audience? I played a butler. I had one line! I forgot it.
But don't worry. This is going to be easy.
For you, maybe. Not for me. I'm not an actor. I'm a movie star.
Morris! Quickly!
Why do you keep shouting when I am cooking?
You're on TV. Look, look.
Oh, Christ. You'll
kill him. Ah, how handsome you were.
Then you'll get round to me, I hope.
There's that woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Who took you away from us?
It's burning.
You will burn, Morris.
Yes, dear.
Get my grouch thoughts in order.
You were a good mother. I rather left you holding the babies, didn't I?
You did do that. Three children under six, to be exact.
I can see it must have been inconvenient.
But you put your own pleasure first.
I did love you. For a time. And for the rest of the time, I was fond of you.
Please, no.
More than
no,
fond
don't.
Of you.
You don't have to. I don't want it.
It's my goodbye to you.
Why, where are you going?
The mission of each true knight is duty, nay, is privilege. To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear...
Okay, we can only go so far with Peter O'Toole.
Many talents.
And that man had two musicals under his belt.
That ain't no MacArthur Park.
No. Shorter, thank God. That's clips from Ratatouille, Lawrence of Arabia, Beckett, The Lion in Winter, The Ruling Class, perfect for December, The Stuntman, My Favorite Year, Venus, lovely scene with he and Vanessa Redgrave, and we had the fade out, Man of La Mancha. So, yeah, the 8 nominations, the most award nominations for an actor who never won the Academy Award, and what was great was when he got his honorary Oscar in 2003, he said as part of his acceptance speech, "I just want to win it outright." And, you know, no disrespect toward Forrest Whitaker in Last King of Scotland, but I thought he should have got it for Venus. Because this was the story of a 70-something retired act. Well, no, he was not retired. He was an actor who was hitting on a 20-something young girl. And there are only two people in the history of cinema I know that could get away with playing that role. Peter O'Toole and Cary Grant. And by 1955, Cary Grant did not want to play those roles. So, except for Charade. Or Charade, if you're from the region. So, So there is that. And of course, one of them was Goodbye, Mr. Chips. And then because of this, and he got nominated for Mr. Chips. And then if you were told you were going to do a musical with Sophia Loren, or if you're going to do anything with Sophia Loren, you would probably sing no matter how bad you sound.
Pretty much.
Yeah, Martin's performing Harry Carey over here in the audience.
That's funny. His glasses don't look that big.
Oh, jeez.
Holy cow.
Hey. Yeah, you're built like a brick house. Anyway, Jack Brickhouse. All right. My gosh. Guys, your favorite O'Toole moment. Anything that comes to mind. Brian, you mentioned Pizza Hut commercials because you're playing the audio. But that was that's the one with the stuffed crust, which by the way, no person on the planet should ever eat ever. It's just a bad idea. But the fact that in the commercial he does Hamlet's to be or not to be speech and then does it backwards.
With perfect diction, as usual.
Exactly. So, check out on that. So, Tracy?
I don't think it's a moment. I think it's a lasting. I think the word to use is he's so game. Because if you read the Hellraisers, you talk about Burton and a little bit more edgier, angrier at times, and insolent.
Well, I think Liz Taylor will do that to you.
I think Peter O'Toole probably woke up every morning and said, I'm Peter O'Toole. You know, like, oh my gosh, how much better could this possibly get?
Well, yeah, I think the first thought was,
where am I?
Still alive.
Still alive. But, I mean, he just, with some of his role choices, never took himself that seriously.
I agree with you. I think he's probably I think the least angry of the four Hellraisers on that. Yeah, that's true. And all of these guys, you know, if you look at their discography, their filmography, and we have been, you know, it's probably 75%, but the 25% when they are on and they are focused, and in some cases they were sober when they made them, they were absolutely unstoppable. Yeah. And these are also the guys, they'd be the first one to tell you, it's rubbish. They gave me an obscene amount of money, and I did it.
Yeah.
So
I think Burton, upon being asked why he didn't go to the premiere of Cleopatra, said, I have no wish to commit suicide.
He lived that for how many years?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was bad. So
I just remember watching him in his later years when he was he did a season on the Tudors.
Ooh, and how was he?
That's right, yeah.
He played Pope Paul III, and I don't think he ever had a scene with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers throughout his entire run, but it was focusing on the battle of wills between the Catholic Church and Henry VIII. But I just remember as frail as he looked, and he was, you know, in the Pope throne most of the time, and just looking 100 years old, he was still acting rings around Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
One would hope.
Funny you should mention that. I think I'll throw in one of my favorite moments, which is in a not-so-great movie, but Troy, when he's acting with Brad Pitt. The whole scene plays like Peter O'Toole gives Brad Pitt an acting lesson.
And a women's lesson.
Well, that too.
And the only thing missing from Troy is the scene where O'Toole just takes Orlando Bloom and just smacks him in the back of the head. What the hell's wrong
that
with you?
That would have vastly improved the film.
That would have vastly made it a lot shorter, so in that case. Martin, how you doing over there?
Just trying to think of any particular special moment. And this is truly a situation where a body of work comes to mind.
Yep, absolutely. So actually we have, I discussed with Mrs. Sosi, because we have to discuss everything with our sitcom wives, we are packing a bunch of O'Toole films to take with us on vacation, whether we're at home or elsewhere. It's not telling you, definitely big kudos to Peter, and thank you so much for a body of work.
Yeah.
Yes.
Salute.
Definitely. Salute.
So I guess we will shift gears now, because I guess we're doing an hour-long version of Dead People We Like.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be that way.
Okay, so now we move from one...
Well, there's a pretty big one. As Joe Shear said, there's a pretty big one this week.
Do we have the intro?
We
probably did this. Should have done this 40 minutes ago.
You know.
Okay.
Doing our the annual show of Dead People We Like.
there's a pretty big one this
we
week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we should. Thank you, Chris, for that contribution. But I want to get to a couple of names before we get to another strangely different iconic figure in cinema. Audrey Totter, who was one of these B-girl, bad girl actresses who starred in films like The Setup. By the way, check out The Setup. Robert Wise film starring Robert Ryan as a boxer who's supposed to be on the take. Scorsese cites this as one of the most influential early B films of the 1940s. It's really, really, it's done. It's also shot in real time, and it's actually in real time.
Wow.
Unlike other films that say they're in real time and well, not so much.
There are very few.
So anyway, she did those films, Lady in the Lake, Cimarron City. Not since Eddie Albert died the day before the remake of The Longest Yard opened. And we forgot to mention Eleanor Parker, who died, a couple of days after the live production of The Sound of Music?
Yeah. Yes.
So,
she couldn't take it anymore.
And by the way, just to be clear, we know she's not Julie Andrews, we know she's not Mary Martin, but she did not cause the collapse of the economy or kill major genocide.
No.
She did not commit genocide. Just making sure.
Everybody.
People who were online.
Yeah. You woke up the next day. Everything was all right.
That was fine. Eduard Molinaro, who was the Oscar-nominated director of the original La Cage aux Folles, later remade in The Birdcage, so there is that.
And remade again as La Cage aux Folles as a musical.
And yes, it's a Broadway musical.
Yes.
Has it come to town yet? Has it come to the Miroir?
I think it may be coming next season.
Louis Walden, who was I love the New York Times, is actor in Warhol films, Seized for Obscenity.
What part did they see?
Okay, we'll move on.
Point to Martin.
Way to go, Martin. Right off the bench, Robert Horry, three points and back out.
That was a shot fake.
That's a half-court shot right there. Speaking of the T-shirt I'm wearing, which is great for radio, Don Mitchell, who co-starred on the original Ironside and also appeared in shows like I Dream of Jeannie, The Fugitive, The Virginian, but he also starred with Pam Grier and William Marshall in the sequel Scream Blackula Scream. So thank you on that. Now,
so yeah.
You don't get all of the reference.
Thank you, Haunted Flowers. That's Gina and Dan for the Blackula T-shirt, because this is my part of my NPR uniform. So now we move on to a guy who I didn't realize was actually older than Peter O'Toole, but then again, I think he had different lifestyle choices than Peter O'Toole, and that's Tom Laughlin, aka Billy Jack. I think we have a short clip. This is from Billy Jack. Of course, there were four of these things, and yes, I own the Billy Jack box set.
Of course you do.
Of course I do.
Why would you not?
Why would I? Because it was sitting at a Trax Records, I believe it was Trax down in Bloomington, Mr. Slagle.
Yep.
And, for $20, and it just screamed, "Buy me so your family and friends can roll their eyes." The Born Losers, Billy Jack, The Trial of Billy Jack, and Billy Jack Goes to Washington.
My personal favorite.
Oh, God. Here's some audio.
Bernard, I want you to know that I try. When Jean and the kids at the school tell me that I'm supposed to control my violent temper and be passive and nonviolent like they are, I try. I really try. But when I see this boy I love sprawled out by this big ape here, and this little girl, who is so special to us that we call her God's little gift, the sunshine. And I think of the number of years she's going to have to carry in her memory the savagery of this idiotic moment of yours. I just go bizarre.
I told you you'd make a mistake and I'd be waiting.
Watch his feet, man. The key with his feet.
He can do anything he wants with his feet. Really think those Green Beret karate tricks gonna help you against all these boys?
Well, it doesn't look to me like I really have any choice now, does it?
That's right, you don't.
You know what I think I'm going to do then? Just for the hell of it.
Tell me.
I'm going to take this right foot, and I'm going to walk you on that side of your face. And you want to know something? There's not a damn thing you're going to be able to do about it.
Really?
Really?
There you go. That's two highlights from Billy Jack, 1971. Now, Tom Laughlin was a contract player at a bunch of studios in the 50s and 60s. I looked through his IMDb page because he was a that guy, Mr. Slagle. You're like, oh yeah. First thing I saw you of note that you can see him is 1956 film version of Tea and Sympathy, not a date film. And films like The Delinquents. He was Lieutenant Buzz Adams in South Pacific.
Wow.
Yes.
Ooh.
And this is the second actually South Pacific reference, because I showed my daughter American Graffiti, where you can have Harrison Ford singing Some Enchanted Evening. He was in Gidget, the original Gidget, Tall Story. And in 1967, he developed this Native American Vietnam vet who could whip you with his feet. And that was Billy Jack in film, of course, like, as we mentioned earlier. The Bourne Losers from 1967, Billy Jack, 1971, The Trial of Billy Jack, 1974, and Billy Jack Goes to Washington, 1976. The other film, I actually owned this film from 1975. He did a Western called The Master Gunfighter,
yes,
where he was
up
against Ron O'Neill.
Superfly.
Superfly versus Billy Jack, and nobody saw it.
I saw it. I went to the theater to see that.
Did you really?
I did.
Was anybody else there?
No.
You're the one.
I'm the one. He was also in the 1977 remake of The Big Sleep with Robert Mitchum.
Oh, wow.
Remember that? Yes. Man. Back when Mitchum was still a bankable leading man in the 70s. And then they apparently made The Return of Billy Jack in 1986, which I never saw, and it's not part of the box set. So somebody, you know, if you want to help
it's
out on that.
Canon.
And he was also in The Legend of the Lone Ranger, but that requires remembering and thinking about The Legend of the Lone Ranger. Sorry, Clint.
No,
but you know, I guess Clinton Spilsbury, still better than Armie Hammer.
Ooh, that's pretty harsh.
That is pretty harsh.
I'm not sure it's, you know, not is, true.
I was saying, by the way, the new Lone Ranger out on Blu-ray this week. Ta-da!
Hey.
It must be in the timing. So, Tracy, you were talking off air about this was one of your introductions to the antihero.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, again, I was very young when I saw it late night, you know, Friday night TV or whatever. I happened to experience it for the first time, but the notion that somebody, you know, with their intentions versus their actions and struggling, you know, and I half joked about, you know, bullying being such a humongous issue nowadays to a tipping point, if you ask, as a parent of three,
yes,
you know, where it's like, I always tell my kids, I'm like,
do you threaten the kids with this?
No.
Different bully, right?
I think my daughter would really like Billy Jack. I'm a little fearful in that regard. She would like, I'm like, no, you have to realize that the world is always going to make a certain type of person.
Yes.
So it's up to you, a word that I don't even think they say on Fresh Air. But
and film sociology, but thank
exactly,
you.
Exactly, when the mic's off. But yeah, that was my introduction to, like, oh, somebody who didn't have a badge, didn't have a gun, wasn't an authority figure, a legitimate authority, or didn't have a cape.
He had a pair of feet.
Yeah, exactly. And there was nothing you could do about it. Dirty Harry line without it. Dirty Harry.
Exactly. I was on No Limits this week with John Krall, and John and I were talking about Billy Jack. And he said this is one of those films, I think he was 11 when it came out, and he saw it and thought it was, of course, when you're an 11-year-old boy, one of the most awesome things in the history of the world. And then he saw it again in a revival theater when he was 18. Kind of like, it was like I was 7 when I saw Smokey and the Bandit.
Now, wait a minute.
We need to reevaluate Hal Needham's work. I know that. So, Brian, have you covered the music of Coven?
One Tin Soldier.
I'm
afraid that has escaped the blog so far.
We'll have to work on that.
Yeah, I think we will.
And I always remember that in the Golden Turkey Award books, written by I don't know if he was not crazy at one time, but Mike Medved and his brother had written, of course, these wonderful couple of books about bad cinema. And one of the categories was the best film you never saw. And this is a film that won. It actually beat out The Day the Clown Cried, which I find a little hard to believe. Yes, I know, Jerry Lewis Holocaust drama. But yeah, Billy Jack Goes to Washington made that list. And of course, now that it's out on the box set. Now, I'm the person, of course, that I will buy the DVD and I will listen to the commentary. This shouldn't be a shocker to anybody. Tom Laughlin did every single commentary on every single film.
Yeah.
And by the way, everybody's against him. That's the gist of basically his commentaries. There's the tone of, if you listen to Coppola's, he was on the verge of getting fired every time. Mm. Every time.
Well, I believe that.
Okay, that's... And I probably believe So there's
even
that.
The ones he produced himself.
Yes. Then there was Altman's, where, you know, you have to do the over under on when he's going to mention that movies are made for 12-year-old boys now. There is that. But with Laughlin, yeah, everybody was out to get him.
Amazing how many people in Hollywood history have had persecution complexes.
or prosecution complexes. So.
Would you put Billy Jack in a Roadhouse category? Like, it's so bad, but there's just some compelling.
You know what? I think it would be the dad's version of Roadhouse, because that's a slower paced film. It's got Howard Hessman in it, a really uncomfortable rape scene. You know, there's nobody, you know, you're not, Tom Laughlin's not doing Tai Chi shirtless with his feathered hair, but I think we would be sitting on the front stoop looking at Patrick Swayze going, ah, that ain't nothing but Billy Jack. That's nothing but Billy Jack. And we sound like that for some reason.
We would,
so.
Yeah, we would. I could see
that. Mike, you're over there. You have, I was checking in with the other corner on the Billy Jack forum here.
I got nothing now.
Okay, just.
It was one of the first movies I saw that have, you know, full frontal nudity. But
Billy Jack?
Yeah.
Jeez, I have to. Oh, yes, that. I got it now. Okay.
I want to go to movies with Mike. You can Caligula and Billy Jack.
Don't sit next to him during Last Tango in Paris.
Okay. Yeah.
It gets kind of messy.
Sponsored by.
I can't believe it's not. Yeah, yeah.
All right, that's enough of that. That's brilliant. So, okay. But yeah, thank you,
Before
Tom.
Before you get to the movies that are actually released, quick shout out to Joan Fontaine.
That's right, Joan Fontaine. Yeah. That's right. She won an Academy Award for Rebecca, was also in Suspicion, and my first impression of her was a Bruce Springsteen song. She was a Bruce Springsteen lyric in Does This Bus Stop at 82nd Street from Bruce's first album, Greetings from Asbury Park, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. So, that's very good. I forgot about Joan. So thank you on that one.
Joan didn't forget about you, Matt.
Nobody does, really. Jeez. All right. New in theaters. How much time we got left, Kobe?
We got 9 minutes.
We got 9 minutes. That's good.
That's enough.
You know what? Because this is good, because I'm going to skip the new releases on DVD and Blu-ray, because really, here we go. Lone Ranger, Elysium, Kick-Ass 2, One Direction, Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters, The Family. Yeah, exactly. But the best of the lot, and you should check it out, is Prisoners, which was a really strong film and unfortunately for it was the first of a string of really strong dramas to come out in the last 3 months. Yeah. And just kind of got pushed aside by Gravity and everything else since. Hmm. So there is that. Okay, Kobe is looking at me wondering, what did I think of Anchorman 2?
I read Chris Lloyd's
And Chris is kind of on it, and so is Ed. This film is a lot like Jason Kidd, just shooting constantly, and every now and
sooner or later,
every now and then he's gonna make. This film has no business being almost 2 hours.
Really?
Yeah, ooh. yeah. So I understand with sequels you have to add more people.
Oh, the first one was up there.
I don't think it was close to two, maybe hour 45.
Yeah, I don't know.
But there's
well,
a
fortunately
few...
they haven't wasted any effort marketing it.
No.
Yeah, and you know what? The beauty of it is that's done, for at least for another couple of weeks. But there's something that, yes, there are shtick things that have to come back. Guess what? Paul Rudd has a new cabinet, and it's not filled with cologne. It's filled with condoms. Oh. So there is that. There is a cameo heavy, even bigger gang fight sequence, which slows the movie down. And yes, there is something that happens with Ron Burgundy. Now, the first time he was in a glass box of emotion because of his dog. Well, this one, I don't want to give away too much, but they make an homage to Ice Castles.
No.
Yeah. That also weighs the film down an extra 15, 20 minutes. Kobe has a smirk on his face. Apparently I was wrong.
How long
is Anchorman?
94.
And how long is Anchorman 2?
119.
Yep. Doesn't need to be. You just sliced about 20 minutes off of that, especially the homage to Ice Castles. And that song, Martin is in the book he gave me. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Martin, by the way, my birthday was yesterday, and Martin gave me a great book. It has nothing to do with film sociology. I Hate Myself and Want to Die, the 52 most depressing songs you've ever heard.
and I think we've all heard
them. We've all heard these. So, yeah, don't leave a cake out in the rain. Geez. So, yeah.
Turn around, Bright Eyes.
Oh, stop that. Who sang that originally?
Bon
Bonnie Tyler.
Let's keep it that way. All right. Also in theaters, we have the latest from the Coen brothers called Inside Llewyn Davis, which this would be a great double feature with their film A Serious Man, because it's that tone. This is kind of their Ed Johnson not referred to it, and you could read his review in Nouveau, as kind of a de-romanticizing the folk movement. This is Oscar Isaac, who is playing the lead. He is Llewyn Davis. He's so not Dave Von Ronk. Just letting you know, he's not Dave Von Ronk. Just like Dreamgirls is not about Motown. No, not at all.
Just gonna
put that out there. Yeah. Right, exactly. So it's a folk singer. It's pre-Dylan in Greenwich Village in the early 60s. And it's, I think the Coen brothers' Valentine to the films, and also profiles of the tortured artist. If you think of films like Amadeus, Immortal Beloved, we think of people like John Lennon, Jim Morrison. You know, people
I've
who were...
suffered for my music, and now it's your turn.
Martin Morris off the bench, ladies and gentlemen. Another half-court shot.
Why isn't he starting?
Hey, I think that Morris guy should be starting there. Yes, so...
Because Matt makes more money.
That's so not true. So yeah, that is, anyway, it is a low key Coen Brothers film, but it's very enjoyable nonetheless. It like A Serious Man, probably like Lebowski when it first came out, it's going to irritate some audiences. So, but in a good way. Also worth checking out that's opening this week, American Hustle, the latest from David O. Russell. You have Amy Adams, Jennifer Lawrence, Bradley Cooper, Christian Bale, a couple other actors we can't mention because they're kind of surprise cameos, all in wacky 70s clothing and hair because 70s.
It's zany.
It is zany.
How much does the film beat you over the head with, hey, it's the 70s?
Well, it didn't bother me as much with this one because it's more about these two small-time con artists played by Bale with the great comb-over and gut and Amy Adams. Again, chubby guy with smoking hot babe. Living the dream, friends. But they're two small-time con artists that get caught by an FBI agent played by Bradley Cooper and his corn rolls, or his curlers. And they wind up having to do some work for them, some undercover sting work that could or could not be based on some politicians and other hierarchs getting the shaft in the 1970s. Not Richard Roundtree, but but a really well-done, if you like David O. Russell films like Silver Linings Playbook and The Fighter and I Heart Huckabees, it's kind of a little bit of who's conning who, yep. And it's a lot of fun. Definitely worth checking out. Also in theaters, well, Saving Mr. Banks, the less you know about the real-life author of Mary Poppins, the less you're going to be irritated at the way this film treats her. There's that, because Emma Thompson, of course, plays P.L. Travers, who, guess what, she cries at the end of the movie, but for different reasons in real life. Tom Hanks plays Walt Disney. And this is a role that Emma Thompson's playing the part. Maggie Smith would have done it 20 years ago.
Ah.
She reminded me a lot of Tommy Lee Jones in Hope Springs, because the first 20 minutes, I can't believe I'm going to be spending this much time with one of the most insufferable people on the planet, Fussy McFusserton. Yeah, it's okay. There's good acting. Colin Farrell's really good. Colin Farrell plays P.L. Travers' dad. Way to go. There's a gene pool.
Whoa. Yeah.
And he's actually quite good at it. He gets a chance to do some light comedy and have a couple serious scenes, and he's not playing Bullseye. So that's pretty good out there.
Always a good thing.
Always a good thing. And also happening tomorrow night at Garfield Park in their Art Center at 7 p.m., Curse of the Cat People.
Nice.
From 1944. Thank you, Eartha.
A lovely little alternative, spooky, supernatural Christmas movie.
Kobe, is there anything happening at your alma mater, or are they on winter break?
Winter break hits this weekend, but tonight, Friday night, 7 o'clock, IU Cinema, the 2012 foreign language drama, Wadja.
Oh, that might be up for Best Foreign Film, so check that out. All right, let's go around the board. Last-minute plugs before we go on vacation. Tracy?
You might have time off. Your kids might be off, so you may have the opportunity to see Indie Style weekdays at 9 a.m. on Wish TV. We cook. I drink too much coffee, and
And you have to
try to self edit.
And you have to deal with Chris Lloyd on Fridays.
I do deal with Chris Lloyd on Fridays. I like him.
And there are some days that he starts with you guys and he ends with us. And vice versa.
That's a set of bookends. Wow.
Yeah, I know. Nice bookends. Brian.
10 by 10, Shakespeare's 10 greatest plays in 10 minutes each. Eclecticpond.org for tickets.
Well, I can only speak for the station. Downton Abbey Season 4, January 5th, 9 o'clock. WFYI1.
Martin, thank you so much for I Hate Myself and Want to Die, written by Tom written by Tom Reynolds.
And a happy
truly
birthday to
Matt. Is a laugh out loud moment.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Guys, thank you so much. It's like the public radio version of The Expendables. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Merry Christmas. December greetings to everybody.
Happy Festivus.
Yes, you're listening to The Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the point and WFYI.org.
Which one of us is Jet Li?
Let's go to Sun King.
Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.